good to go ballet today.
All right.
Besides this, 8:34 on August 5th, 2026, and I am convening this in-person video conference, telephone conference meeting of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act of the Association's anti-press policy. All information disclosed or discussed will be for carrying out the business of the association. Proper notice was filed on July 24th, 2026, and published in the Texas Register in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. A copy of this notice should be attached to the summary of the official minutes of this meeting. We do have a quorum, as we call eight. We have eight directors confirmed as attending by video or audio conference or in person. Welcome to the new director, James Kennedy. Welcome, sir. Familiar face.
Thank you.
Who was appointed by to the board by Commissioner Crawford on July 29th. Also welcome to Jane Braver. Your tradition is the new executive director. Also in attendance, current executive director Bart Bowles, director designate Jim Braver, general counsel Jane Price, and association employees Jared Terry, Tommy Haggerty, Cindy Nichols.
Yes,
from TDI, we have Bain Hugo, Jeff Jones, John Walker, Sean Martin, Kate Bain, and Mandy Vasquez. James Huckabee is hot in traffic and will be here, so I'm kidding. I think that's all the preliminaries part. Brings us to item number one, consideration possible action on the consent agenda. Jan.
Oh, okay. So Bart has that up on the screen. It's just an approval of the summary of the official minutes from our last board meeting on April 21st, and then a ratification of the payment of Delta's fees and expense billing for the first quarter of 2026. And the total for that was $237,405. So again, these consent agenda items are found on page 1-3 of your board materials.
We did have one change to the minutes. I think it indicated that I was attended the April 21st meeting. I had a conflicting New Mexico Guarantee Association meeting, so it was not at the Texas meeting on the 21st. And Toppin's already said that change in the minutes to be signed. Any other changes, discussion? If not, I'll entertain an agenda or and a
this
motion.
Ted Kennedy's moves with as amended.
David Summer second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Item two, consideration possible action regarding any matters presented by TDI. Does TDI have anything in public session?
I'm happy to tell you what, I have nothing headed your way.
That's good news. All right, item number three, we have the report and recommendation from the personnel committee. David, turn it over to you.
Yes, so the committee met on July 22nd. We reviewed the non-salary benefits to staff and did not make any recommendations for changes. We discussed two things related to the executive director's contract. First, we concluded that that Bart had fulfilled the requirements to receive his final longevity payment, and that should be paid, therefore, scheduled. And we also we were going to need to have a resolution for that. And then we also discussed adding Jan to the 457B deferred compensation plan, and we have a resolution for that. So down on page 3.2, we have two resolutions reflecting those items, if you want to take those in order. So the first states that BART has met the requirements of the final longevity incentive payment that should be payable on December 1st.
David, if we could just for a second, per the advice of General Counsel Price, he has a suggestion on handling that longevity payment resolution. Dan, would you like to address that?
Yes, we have another issue to discuss on the executive director deferred compensation contract in executive session in connection with the 47 plan. So I'd like to address that resolution on the longevity payment following the executive session. And I think you know what we're talking
okay.
about. Okay. Right.
Do we want to hold off on both resolutions until we get through?
We'll just hold off on the resolution related to the longevity payment. We'll go ahead and do the resolution ratifying Jan 247.
Okay.
So the other resolution except for the one at the top.
Okay. Then I'll move for the resolution 457 retirement.
Second resolution on 3.2 that is following the book.
So moved.
For the second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries.
Okay. We also discussed two recommended revisions from staff to the employee handbook, one implementing a cell phone stipend policy because staff needing to use personal or their personal cell phones for work-related purposes, and one related to the commercial credit card policy. Any context that Jan or Bart you want to add? We have resolutions that the committee recommends adopting.
Right, so we are recommending a monthly stipend of $35 a month. That was determined by looking at common employer practices. And we found that the typical range is between $3 and $50 a month. The committee also recommended that the effective date be September 1st of this year. And then as far as the credit card policy, with BART's retirement, we needed to replace our existing credit card program. And that's because it was personally guaranteed by BART. So we've established a new commercial credit card program through J.P. Morgan Chase. And then we have a proposed credit card policy that outlines the appropriate use and documentation requirements of eligibility, et cetera. So both of those policies have been reviewed by General Counsel. And the committee did recommend the board approving both policies and adding both to the employee handbook.
Hey, Jen, real quick question. And remind me, and I should know this, but I'm sorry, I just don't remember. The new card does not require the personal guarantee of the executive director, or will it?
No, it will not.
Okay.
No, it will not. Any further questions for Jan on either of the two policy changes updates?
And one thing, if it's appropriate to mention now, I just wanted to mention to the board, there were no changes in the employee benefits, but there were a couple of minor updates to the premiums and coverage levels. And I just wanted to highlight those. The primary change was the renewal of the BCBS health insurance plan. The current coverage levels remain the same, but the annual premium increases about 18%. Keep in mind that those premium costs are expected, that's about $12,000 a year, but those premium costs are expected to decrease after January 1st of 27 with BART's retirement. We did look at two alternative health plan options, but neither provided a better overall value. For the long-term disability insurance, again, coverage remained unchanged, but there was a slight increase in premium of about 5%, but that equates to about $124 annually. And then finally, for the group life and the AD&D insurance, coverage remains at 2x salary up to a maximum of $250,000. But we are recommending increasing the guaranteed issue amount from $125,000 to $170,000. So that will allow future employees to obtain more coverage without the medical underwriting. And that's an additional annual cost of $169. So I'm happy to answer any questions regarding those two things as well.
And so the board knows, not changing carriers, not changing substantially the coverage, and a reasonable increase in premium, we've always considered that within the discretion of the executive director in consultation with the personnel committee to continue those coverages. So no board action required.
I think we voted on the cellular funding, the credit card policy.
Correct.
So I'll take a motion. Do you like to take them together?
Yes.
Ted moves.
We do.
Okay.
For June.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Motions are adopted. David?
And then the final thing, the personnel committee reviewed our charter as we do annually and had no recommended changes. And that's it from the personnel committee.
Item five is assessment investment committee, which would be me. So the assessment investment committee met on July 23rd. We reviewed the net position schedule for active insolvencies, as we do each time we meet. We also reviewed the association's current investments. We're in a pretty strong financial position, especially with insolvency or two looming perhaps in the near future. We considered the appropriateness of assessments and refunds in 2026. Staff. They did not recommend either. The Class A, we're covering this cost through the insolvency expense account, if I get that acronym correctly. And based on the net position schedule, we're in good shape for all our current active insolvencies. We did discuss kind of hypotheticals around potential 2027 assessments. No action items there, just kind of game planning, looking at what might be coming. And we also had some discussion about the 2024 assessment protest. I think we might hear more about those in the executive session later on. And then we did have one action item. We did the annual review of the committee's charter. Staff identified and recommended some minor revisions, removing language that talked about the committee overseeing changes to the assessment process after the changes to the association's governing act. And that was when that was, several years ago, 2019, so working several years ago. And those are, I guess, that overview of oversight is complete. Really, that reference is dated, so that was removed. Again, more of an update, not a substantive change to the department. But we do have a resolution, page 42. Investment committee is recommending that the board adopt changes to the charter. So any questions? If not, I guess I would entertain the motion. Resolution 42.
Williams first?
Second.
All right, second by Frank. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item five, We have consideration possible action regarding impaired insolvent member insurers. So, Gina, this
yes.
you?
Yes. So, starting on page 5.2 of your board materials, there's a list of the 12 active receivership estates that have been activated. The list doesn't include receivership proceedings that have been closed, but where we are still continuing obligations. There are four additional companies that are being monitored since they are subject to ongoing rehabilitation proceedings. As far as contractual obligations, the association has paid claims and assumption reinsurance funding for the first 5 months of 2026, and that totaled approximately $5.4 million, and the projected remaining policyholder obligations are approximately $9.4 million, and that was of June 30th of 2026. The projected policy obligations report provides details of the remaining obligations for these insolvencies, and that's included on slide 3 of your board materials. We also received about $11.8 million in distributions of estate assets from Bankers and Colorado Bankers for the first 5 months of 2026. Premiums collected during those 5 months were $865,000. There are a couple of miscellaneous reports that relate to communication activities and complaints for the second quarter of 2026. The key takeaway there is that we handled 479 phone calls, 11 emails, and had nearly 2,900 website visitors in the second quarter of 2026. And we did not receive any complaints for this quarter. And I believe that has been the case for the past, I don't know how many years. If there's any questions, we can take those now, or we can go over, you know, highlights of some of the key insolvencies.
Questions for Jan, if we want to go over.
All right, so we can start with the Global Bankers Group. That includes Bankers Life, Colorado Bankers, and South of National. For Colorado Bankers and Bankers Life, the assumption reinsurance transaction with Continental General has been completed, and substantially all covered policy obligations have been transferred. The remaining work has really shifted to claims administration, or from claims administration to post-closing administration, final accounting, and recovery allocations. You'll recall there is a small group of policies that were excluded from the original assumption transactions. The exposure associated with these retained policies, they were included like pre-2026 deaths, death claims, unsubmitted death claims, uncashed checks, et cetera. So for Texas, the exposure is again, relatively modest, well under $1 million. I think it's around $670,000. The Global Task Force has now completed the administrative service agreement with Continental General so that those policies can continue to be administered by Continental General on behalf of the guarantee associations. As far as estate recoveries, recoveries from estates continue to be an important source of reimbursement. That involves additional state asset recoveries and restitution proceedings involving Greg Lindbergh. And these matters could provide additional recoveries for the Guarantee Association. NOLGA is continuing to actively participate in the Lindbergh restitution proceedings. The focus on those proceedings has shifted from determining damages to determining how future recoveries will be allocated. And NOLGA is actively advocating to protect guarantee association recovery. So to put the size of these insolvencies really into perspective, guarantee associations have now committed nearly $1.8 billion nationwide, about $1.43 billion with paid and direct policy benefits, and another $331 million funded the transfer of the remaining obligations to Continental General. And then Texas' share of those costs was about $102 million. And that included $83 million in direct policy benefits and $18 million associated with the Continental Assumption Reinsurance transaction. So with that Assumption Reinsurance transaction complete, we're kind of focusing on, again, final accounting. And that includes a true-up of expenses and recoveries. The recommendation from the task force is to replace the original allocation methodology, which was one third between the three companies, and replacing that with actual loss experience and guarantee association exposure. So both expenses and prior estate distributions would be adjusted retrospectively. They will reallocate about $27.8 million in total expenses using this updated methodology. And that revised distribution is 60% for Colorado Bankers, a little over 20% for Bankers Life, and a little under 20% for Southland National. For Texas, the aggregate impact across all three estates is a net receivable of about $2.23 million. As far as Southland National, one of the other global companies, that assumption reinsurance transaction closed on June 1st. And that transferred, again, that was with Continental General, and that transferred virtually all the remaining covered policy obligations to the private market. That closed on June 1st, but it was retroactive to April 1st. Texas's share of that assumption reinsurance transaction was $4.9 million. And prior to the transfer, the association had paid more than $2.4 million in direct policy benefits and administration expenses. So again, the remaining emphasis is on this final accounting true-up and then the ongoing Fred Lindbergh litigation. So happy to answer any questions there or if Bart has anything to add.
We did get an update, Jan, last night. On Southland National, we knew there were some retained policies that could not be assumed by Continental General. We found out there was 2,247 nationally. Texas has 189 of those. I sent another request this morning because I haven't found policies. I don't know reserves. I don't know exposure for face amounts. So we are going to see additional claims there. A lot of times, those are policies with bad records. They may be missing information, and they also may be over the 96 age limit. Continental General is kind of drawing the line. They don't want to assume any policy. So there's still a little bit left on Southland to do, and Jan mentioned a little bit on both Bankers and Colorado Bankers. I'll point out, if you look at the snapshot financials in your materials, look and say, here's the amount we assessed, and here's our net position, and you're saying we're almost done. There's a lot of money left over. The recoveries from the special master handling the criminal case against Greg Lindbergh, it was not anticipated they were going to be able to seize those companies and collect those monies and make distributions to all the victims, individual annuity contract holders, there's some Bermuda companies, and then the North Carolina receivership, so the global bank companies. We had no idea those recoveries were coming. We anticipate there's going to be more recoveries coming. So there will be excess funds for the board to address after we dig out more detail and provide that to the Assessment Investment Committee. You have to remember, any distributions we receive are still subject to a callback under an early access agreement. So I have to look at reality. What is the true exposure that the receiver may pull back some of those funds? So all this is going to require some investigation. I want to give you the heads up. There'll be more information coming that will probably be changed.
Any questions for the committee or what? Global bankers.
Okay, moving on to North Carolina Mutual. That insolvency has pretty much transitioned into just ongoing administration, and that's being done by the association. We did receive approval of the replacement policy forms that were part of that settlement with, I think it was Universal Life. And through July 13th of this year, we've completed 60 claims batches, and that accounts for about $435,000 paid in Texas claims.
This one's a little messy. Let's remember, we're about 200,000 policies for North Carolina Mutual nationally. We have records for maybe 130,000. A lot of policies with no records. So it's been a very difficult administration through the TPA. The Universal Life policies that Jan mentioned, the administration of those were not handled appropriately in rehabilitation. Policy insurance charges were increased to the maximum. So values being deducted from the policy values, and policy was never advised. But some of the policies were in a lapse position or had significantly have reduced values in policy that had never been advised. That's why we created the settlement opportunity for the policyholders to receive a cash payment and go into details of how it's calculated, or a single premium paid up whole life policy, or a whole life policy with the same face amount they have under that universal life policy, but paying premiums going forward. In either scenario, either one of those three, the policyholders got the benefit of that settlement calculation, either in a cash payment or to reduce their premiums under the whole life policy going forward, or to completely purchase that single premium policy. So the policyholders have been advised. We're in the process of implementing it. There were 38 policyholders in Texas. 14 of those have been paid. One was found to belong to another state. The other 13 are going to be administered in-house. But Jan was instrumental in getting the policy form completed from TDI. It is not a regular practice of the association, although the statute does allow it. We normally don't offer replacement policies, but because these policies and administration are handled so poorly, we felt we needed to take care of all of them. Sorry, you had to throw that in. Welcome, James Huffman.
Where are you traveling?
You got to sit next to Paul.
How are you?
I'm good. Good to see you. Come
on. Hello.
Questions on North Carolina Mutual?
So, Jim, I'm sorry. There's one more thing. I should have mentioned this on Southland as well. When you look at the snapshot, you see the assessment line where it says $0. How do we come for this? We haven't assessed. If you recall, the board had authorized there were 7 insolvencies where the life insurance obligations would be paid from the accumulated funds in the insolvency expense account. We had realized significant litigation recoveries very late in a life insurance receivership. And so those funds were retained in the insolvency expense account, and the board authorized funding 7 life insurance obligations, or 7 insolvency life insurance obligations from it. And that includes North Carolina Mutual.
Questions on North Carolina Mutual?
Okay.
Then we go on to Bright and then Friday. Both of those are about the same. I didn't go through a lot of history, but basically those, the claims administration on both of those estates is substantially complete for Bright. We've processed more than 11,000 claims, and that's represents 4.7 million in claims paid. We also received a second early access distribution during the quarter, and there's a issue related to that distribution, which we will discuss in executive session. We're also continuing to work with the special deputy to eliminate unnecessary costs associated with the legacy claims processing platform. Friday, the claims administration also is substantially complete. There's been more than 167 claims that have been processed. That represents about 27.5 million. Covered claims paid. The primary remaining issue is involves a dispute with a large hospital system, and we're continuing to work toward an appropriate resolution, but we will discuss that more in executive session.
Questions for Jimmy?
All right, and just a quick update on Penn Treaty. That continues to be in long-term runoff. That's being administered through LTC RE. There have been really no significant operational development since our last meeting in April. Long-term care benefits continue to be paid, and the number of enforced policies and open claims continues to decline. Since the Penn Treaty liquidation back in 2017, we've collected about $694 million in premium, and we've paid about $2.15 billion in policyholder benefits. That's nationwide. Texas's share includes $38 million in collected premium and $113.5 million in benefits paid. As of May 31st of this year, there are about 217 open or pending claims. Again, that's just a quick update. Happy to answer any questions.
Ms. Virginia? Seeing none, anything else? All right. That concludes item five. Item six is executive session. James, do you want me to read this out? And then I'll turn it over to you. The time is 9:07 on August 5th, 2026, and I am recessing the regular session of the Board of Directors meeting of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. In order for the board to meet in executive session, pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act.
The time is 12:11 p.m. on August 5th, 2026, and this. The executive session for the Board of Directors is concluded, and I'm reconvening in a regular session of the meeting pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act.
And I guess the next item was any actions you want to take after executive session?
Yes, we have two resolutions following the executive session. The first resolution is recommending the final longevity payment, section 457B, through up to the executive director. Based on the personnel committee recommendations, the following resolution is presented to the board of directors for consideration of possible adoption. There's a slight amendment to this part, just for your reference. Resolve that the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association accepts the report from its personnel committee that A, Executive Director Bart Bowles will do a thorough contribution to his 457B plan to align the association's contributions to the plan with the expectations under the Executive Employment and Deferred Compensation Contract. B, Executive Director Bart Bowles has met all requirements to receive the final longevity payment, incentive payment, the EEDCC, and C, such true up contribution and longevity payment will be made to Mr. Bowles December 1, 2026, with the details of the true up contribution to be discussed between the Chairman of the Board and Executive Director Bart Bowles.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Yes. So I can call the motion.
Call for motion.
So moved. Second.
Any questions?
Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Motion carries. Thank you.
Second resolution addresses the Friday Health Insurance Company receivership and claims made by HCA Hospital Group. This resolution is resolved. The Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association Board authorizes the Executive Director and General Counsel to take whatever action is necessary to resolve the claims of HCA made to the association in relation to the Friday Health Insurance Company and receivership liquidated.
All right, we'll entertain a second to that resolution.
Well, Harrison,
is it clear that when you say executive director, you're referring to both? That would include both Jan and Bart.
The executive director refers to the then city executive director.
Got it. Well, thank you.
So it may change.
But long enough to be about
27. Intentionally brought enough to be following direction of the executive director.
So a motion second.
And first by Harrison.
Second.
Any questions? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries, passes unanimously. Thank you. Okay. Item 8. Quarterly report from the Executive Director of Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association activities.
Okay, well, the first item was the appointment of a new director in our board vacancy, which we've done. So we can skip through that. Executive director transition, we're continuing to transition. What Bart is doing, and I'm trying to take in everything that is in his head that has reflected in his head over the last 39 years.
39.
Let's see. Bart is also coordinating with the NOLGA committees to facilitate transition. The roles that he has do not automatically transfer. I think that's it.
So what we're doing, just so you don't find me, if you contact us, you'll know what to expect. To make sure we had notified all the entities and proper bodies on communications and we don't miss something, starting next week, although we've already initiated some of this with NOLGA, we're going to make sure that Jan is the primary contact for anything to the association that they would have been contacting me. I'll still know, and I'll probably still get copies on things, and Jan, I'll coordinate. I'll still be executive director, but we'll make sure the notifications go to Jan. We're also changing the way some of our invoicing comes into the office. We've set up a mailbox where instead of a lot of the things that have been coming to me, now go to an invoice email that all we can all see and clear out. So nothing gets missed or lost in emails. And the last thing, starting next Monday, I'm going to stop coming in the office except for one day a week. I'll come in on Wednesdays and last projects and status and coordinating, although I'll still be available working for my study. This will allow Jan and staff to work a little closer without me being there hovering around. And then after Labor Day, I'll start coming to the office at all. So this is just a way to see, and you'll see how we've begun to transition. We'll have two committee meetings and a board meeting. Jan and I jointly have been doing the prep, but Jan doing more of the presentations. I'm trying to step back. Today, got some issues I just had to chime in on. You'll see more of that in October. This allows us to identify anything we may have skipped and what we've been going through in the documents and our communications. You will see a follow-up email from me. I'm going to ask for feedback. Anything you would like to see us focus in the last, you know, 5 months of transition here, anything you want us to spend more time on or implement, we just want to have you to have the opportunity to voice your direction on the transition. I will be available after January 1, just not as readily available. And I did not establish my rate. My accounting consultant that I lived with the last 4 years set that for me. So we can talk about those arrangements, but I will still be available.
Bart, I saw your email to Caitlin earlier.
Yes.
Are you planning on sending another email confirming how you want communication?
Yes, I'm still going to be the executive director, but I think we'll go ahead and change all the communications to go to Jan. That way we'll find out if someone missed it.
That's fine. So there's something else that you're going to be sending.
We're just going through and checking the list. We have a long several pages.
Very good.
Vendor list from our business continuity plan. We're just going down the list.
Wanted to make sure, because I knew that was sent. I just wanted to make sure you were sending that.
Right.
Very good. Thank you.
The next item is just an update on the state auditor's efficiency audit. We received a notice that the Life and Health Guarantee Association, as well as the title and the P&C Guarantee Associations, were going to be included in an efficiency audit that was relating to TBI. And what they call joint underwriting associations or advisory organizations that are subject to Chapter 327. We had discussions with Dan and other council of our sister guarantee associations, and we jointly took the position that we are nonprofit entities and we are not state agencies. And we are not joint underwriting associations or advisory organizations subject to Chapter 327. So we talked to TDI, they advised the auditor of that. And so the auditor's response was that they will proceed only with the Texas Windstorm Association for now, but they did not formally withdraw request. So we want to raise this at the next audit committee's meeting because it's kind of highlighted that maybe we want to consider undertaking, you know, an expansion of our audit scope, given the possibility that we may be subject to a future audit. So we'll discuss this at the audit committee meeting that's currently scheduled for October 12th of this year. As far as other activities, just briefly, Dan, Bart, and I attended the MPC meetings last week in Chicago. Bart presented on the business continuity and transition planning. I presented on the long-term care marketplace developments, both at the legal seminar. We're also, the three of us are scheduled to attend the NAIC summer meeting in Columbus, Ohio. That's coming up next week. There's also an IR meeting that is planned in Tempe, Arizona, October 6th through the 8th. So that is the activity.
The Chapter 327 you represented.
Yes. Right? No, government code, right? No.
I've got it here.
I wasn't sure which chapter we were.
It was government.
It's a government code. Okay. That just sounds fine. Yeah. That makes sense.
So if you're ready for agenda item 9. Yeah.
All right. Consideration of possible actions on corporate governance interest. A director's feedback. I know the director has submitted any issues of concern for discussion under the corporate governance agenda item. Your mind was in private meeting below the topics were submitted for consideration. Either Dan or Board, that was placed there a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And would you just give a quick the purpose of that?
So when we distribute the mirror materials before every meeting, in the email distributing the materials, we remind the board that if you have any governance concerns, meaning interactions of the board with staff, interactions among the board, how the board deliberates, if you have any concerns with that, you can bring it to my attention or Jan's or directly to Dan. It's best that we hear about it before a board meeting and say, okay, should this be discussed in a public session or in an executive session? But that offering the opportunity to have a mechanism to address any, I would say, shortfalls in our governance practices, it's always available to you. So we distribute that with every meeting. And then in October, there's usually a few specific questions we'll send out. How do you feel the board is performing in these areas and that areas? And ask for some of your feedback. So every meeting is a general catch-all. And then in October, we'll ask you a couple specific questions on performance of the board and interactions with the board.
Thank you. That brings us item 10.
Yeah, to 9.
990. Yes, so draft form 990 has been prepared for 2025. Bart and I have reviewed it. We have provided it to the board members to review in advance. The filing deadline is November 15th. Unless there are questions, there's nothing for the board to do. Again, unless there are questions after this board meeting, Jared will go ahead and get that filed.
So this is your opportunity. Any questions you have about the 990 or any concerns? There is a question in the 990. Was the document provided to the governing body of the entity for review? This meets that requirement. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. I
see.
That was 990.
Yep.
Item 11, consideration of possible action regarding the following financial and accounting matters. Review and acceptance of current financial statement. And then Jared will review some highlights from the May 31, 2026 financial statements. All right, Mr. Jared.
Thank you. I'll try to get through this quickly because I know lunch is ready. The first item there, we just wanted to remind you that we had told you last time about the escrow accounts that we had set up for BLIC and CBLIC. We had requested that those escrow funds be moved to the GA's bank accounts because we had finished the majority of our claims out of that. So in April, we made that request. It was moved in April, and on the same day, they actually had more recoveries. So they put more money back in there. We have now requested that that be transferred to the GA and that any future deposits in that account be sent directly to us rather than put it in the escrow. So you'll see those on future financial statements. The unbilled assessments, you see a large change there in May, and that was mostly due to the SNC assumption that Jan had talked about earlier. We had about a $5 million assumption for that. We were carrying actually a little more on that in our obligation, so that's why it went down that much, and that has now been revised. And we will have, I believe Bart mentioned something about the retained policies on SNCC. So that may be changing a little bit in future financial statements. Down at the bottom of the page, we have the North Carolina Mutual retained policies that Bart or Jan mentioned in our write-up on North Carolina Mutual. So that was about $3.67 million, and that has now been added to our financial statements to account for that. Next page, please. Jan had mentioned about our early access from BLIC and CBLIC, and then I just talked about the one that we received there in April. So you'll see that showing up in our income statement for under state recoveries, about $10.6 million, and the premiums that we have received also for BLIC and CBLIC there in May. Don't have anything else on this page, and I just wanted to point out here, we always bring this up at every meeting, our assessment capacity. We're at $1.8 billion. This will be updated when we get the premium numbers in October. And then underneath that, we have the intercompany loans that we had discussed earlier. And that we had additional borrowings in since the last board meeting. And so that is now the balance. That has actually been reduced here recently because we received a distribution for Bright. And so that number will be reduced at the next board meeting. I believe that's all I have on financial statements, unless there are any questions.
We're hearing none, Jared. Thank you. That takes us to item number 12, consideration and possible actions regarding the 2026 calendar of activity and confirmation of the next meeting date. Our next board meeting is tentatively scheduled for Tuesday, October 27, 2026. So are there any conflicts that any of the directors have with the October 27th meeting? Yes. Okay. Well, that's the last item on our agenda. Is there any other anything else before we return? Any other business? If not, we'll let it have a motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. The time is 4:30 p.m. August 5th, 2026, and this meeting of the Board of Directors of Texas Life and Health Insurance Guaranty Association that has been held pursuant to Texas Intermediate Office, which is adjourned.